Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
So I'll tell you one quick story. One time, I didn't tell anyone on the cast. They still don't know this, but they were so drunk that we recorded a whole episode, and then the Skype window wasn't recording, and I was just like, oh shit. So instead of saying anything, I just started recording like 2 hours into the cast and just kept going. and then I had them keep repeating themselves because I'm like, oh yeah, remember what we were talking about? And they were like, this is a really long cast. I'm like, no, it's not.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, and then they listen to it. They're like, wow, that was a lot shorter. You must have edited a lot out. I'm like, oh yeah, the whole first 2 hours I edited out because the fucking Skype crashed on it. Wow. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's cool.
So now they'll know.
They don't listen to Financial Cast. We're safe. We're good. So welcome everybody to a special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. I'm Matty Studios and I'm guest hosting today and I'm starting this party off right. We're talking finance with Jason Ault and Cripple Command and Marcel.
Yeah, if you guys don't know, Matty Studios is from Heavy Meta. This is our brother podcast. We did Heavy Meta with GP Vegas. If you saw that episode, if you guys were listening to that back then. So we had to bring him on because he knows his moto game and he's been getting his,
my degree in finance on MTGO. That's what I'm studying for. It's going pretty good. Funny enough, like a lot of people, I jumped on moto, completely made every mistake in the book. Basically, Kevin Metal's biography. I just did everything wrong, bought every card, sold way too early, completely misread everything. And then I just got to the point where I was like, you know, if I'm gonna do this, I have to start learning. And I follow the best, man. Follow Brainstorm Brewery. Try to read everything I can and try and do the MTGO Finance Hero, kind of like thing on my own, just for my own personal improvement. But I've learned a lot, in the past year, and I know we're on Theros rotation right now, or not rotation, but Theros has dropped and I'm getting a lot of tweets from people like, I'm buying in right now, I'm buying in today, and I'm like, no. So just a word, I know it'll be Friday when you guys hear this, but please, don't buy cards yet.
On Friday they should be buying the cards right before the Pro Tour.
Yes, because... okay, so yeah, so sorry, I guess it comes out Friday, so it is Tuesday we're recording. So yes, the all optimal window to buy cards, not all cards, but there will be some valleys for sure, is gonna be Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Friday is usually too late because deck techs, there's some like information that gets out or as soon as coverage starts, like things have leaked. But, you know, Wednesday night, Thursday, I know you're gonna hear this Friday, so time travel. I guess Friday morning you could do it. Marcel, get the cast out early.
Oh, I wish you could pull some strings like that. We might be able to. Maybe.
Nice. Maybe.
Well, it starts at midnight. What's the time delay there?
Oh, that's right. It's Dublin.
Dublin's 5 hours ahead of us. So like noon.
So it'll be 5 a.m. when it comes, yeah, when four, this comes out.
Yeah, 4 a.m. You're right.
Ugh. 1 a.m. my time.
So you have approximately, if you are this far into the cast, you should probably be switching over and buying your cards.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got maybe 10 minutes left.
You know?
Surprise.
So I'm gonna start off real quick because I know a lot of people were excited that I was coming on Brainstorm Brewery and they wanted me to answer two questions. And Marcel, I guess we can ask you too, but a lot of people, Jason and Ron, you guys can talk about this a bit, but
are we allowed to, are you giving me permission to answer a question on my own podcast?
Yes.
Is that what just happened?
Absolutely.
Is that what the fuck just happened?
I think I'm one of the few guests that can pull this. Not many can, but I get a lot of people asking us, what the hell? Where do you learn all this information? How do you do it? And are you just like scouring, eBay and looking for prices? Like, where are you getting your financial information? And so one of the ones that I...
And you'll learn the right place to look.
Well, I'm going to blow the ball, and I'm just going to tell people exactly what I do, because I think a lot of people hide things. And I know Jason and Ryan are shit in their pants. Don't tell them.
No. I don't care at all.
I don't write finance articles. Whatever.
I want the general public to be knowledgeable about what's going on.
Yeah. I guess the two things for Moto, I'm not that in-depth on paper, but for Moto, MTG Goldfish is a site I use, and it's only my, like, daily morning paper. That's what it is. You know, I spend 5 minutes, I just scan it real quick, see what's going up, see what's going down. Finance doesn't work, and I'm sure you guys can attribute to this, if you don't keep up on it daily or even hourly. If you're just checking once a week, you're not going to get a deal. You know, you're playing the wrong game, especially on Moto and how fast the economies move. You just have to put in the daily grind. You got to put in your time. But there's a new site I want to talk to you guys about, and it's called Mosuba. It's from Japan. MOSOUBA.com. Just got turned on to this. It's kind of like MTG Goldfish, but it's super, super up to date. It uses, I believe, Cardbot and MTGO traders for its pricing. And it's refreshed every couple minutes, and it's really fast. It's also got some really good sorting features. So that's kind of what we do. So if you're looking at buying in on Theros right now, my suggestion is you could check every day MTGO Goldfish, but while you have Moto open, you should have Mosuba open. And you can be filtering by price, change in tickets, change in percentage, rarity, set specific, rare, mythic. So you can really target in and check out what's going up, what's going down. I find this is how I've been tracking the pattern of how far after the set comes out on Moto do the prices drop to a point where they hit a valley. And I believe that it is about 4 to 5 days after it comes out that it starts to valley right now. So, Marcel, I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, it's I use these tools themselves. You showed me to the Goldfish and I've been on it for the past day just because I've been drafting the entire time and selling pretty much all the cards I got. And yeah, I mean, you just got to be on it during this part of the season and really figure out, you know, what the prices are. You got to find that dip and buy in then because that's the cheapest it's going to be. Some cards will get cheaper later over time, but really all your good mythics are, that's about the best time to buy in on them.
Yeah, I agree. The mythics and the rare, well, not necessarily the rare, but the mythics you buy early. And then the uncommons you buy late because they're still artificially inflated, and they're going to be 5 cents in another week or two. But the card that a lot of people are talking about is Thoughtseize, and I've been following it, and I told everyone I'll keep tweeting till I think it's the right time to buy in. Marcel, it kind of dipped yesterday, so that would be Monday. It's going up again. What do you think? Was that the bottom?
Are people buying it for standard on Moto? For modern?
It's standard playable.
Yeah. It's $9, which is half the price than the Lorwyn one, which is right now. So, I mean, everyone, for modern, you're gonna get it now, cause people wanna play this in modern. This is a modern staple. So, mm-hmm.
I think this is gonna be standard staple, man.
I see it definitely in control decks, but I mean, it's not going to be as played in standard as it is in internal formats.
It'll see more play the more control is taking over the metagame. I think it's a great card because, like, as soon as we switch back into any form of, like, an aggro metagame, like, the card becomes really bad again.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, it flirted with almost 7 tickets, 7.95, and then it shot back up to 8.60, 8.70. Now it's, like, coming down again. And a lot of people were asking, like, and I'm sure you guys see this too in the paper, but when a card hits a valley, its first valley, that usually rebounds right away, and then it tests it again. And so people that are, you know, you can get very caught up very quickly in the hourly rate where you're like, I think it's on the lowest, I'm going to buy in now. And I'm like, just wait. Like, just it's better to buy as the card is moving up than it's falling. That's just standard financial information. Because you never know. This card could, even though people say it's not, this card could go under 5 tickets on Moto.
I mean, see, the thing with me is I would rather hedge my bets. So, like, Wednesday, like you said, Wednesday to Thursday, I would probably just buy whatever the prizes are there. Yeah, you're probably not going to get everything correctly. You're probably not going to get the complete, you know, bottom on many cards or some cards, but you will probably get them on most of them. And I think it's less of a headache than trying to micromanage and checking every hour on the hour. I mean, if you're really like, you got nothing else to do and that's what you're doing, then I can understand that. But otherwise, you got to put your time in and get in, you know, you're basically, you should get paid for what you're doing, all the work that you're doing, and if you're not getting, you know, like if you're spending, you know, 8 hours and then you're saving like what, $10, like it probably doesn't balance out, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe even if you just buy one a day, it'll hedge over the time too.
That's possible.
Yeah, if you want to, if you want to play Sim.
Yeah, because if you do overpay on one of the days, all it does is affect the average price of the playset. Like you don't take a real bath, so if you hedge and spread it over a few days, that's one way to do it. That's a pretty standard financial technique too. Luckily for us, the paper market does not so closely resemble the stock market. The paper market has a lot of lag time built in because the prices update a lot more dynamically on something like, you know, the card bot or MTGO traders or something like that.
Yeah.
In paper, people, you know, have to respond to, well, you know, somebody bought all my cards. The price didn't change because I haven't restocked at a new price. So the prices are a lot slower to change and you can really just kind of take your time a little bit more. And, you have some lag time. Like if you get a good tip that something's, you know, being played a lot at the Pro Tour, it takes sometimes, you know, almost a week for the price to really respond. So some people that are
really
used to Moto or they're like, you know, why isn't this more? Like, why isn't, well, I guess I'll save that for my pick of the week, but, why isn't this card more? I see it, you know, a ton on camera. It's because some of the prices don't change because they were sold out at the old price or, you know, it takes forever to buy all the paper copies. And if the price is higher, because you were talking about that disparity between the price of Moto and the price of paper, if the price is higher, it's going to be harder for somebody to buy all the copies, you know, by themselves as an individual actor. So you're waiting for people to buy by the playset. So it's not a real stock market. The paper market is a lot more like commodities trading, I guess, and the prices are a little slower to update.
So
unless
so
I don't know what commodities trading is, and someone's going to correct me.
What about you, yeah. Ryan? How do you treat this, or what's your perspective on this?
Are we just talking about like as far as Moto? Because like I mean, I don't really play too much, but I do draft a lot when the set first comes up. So you really do have to kind of like look at each card, and sometimes, especially with like the rares that people are playing but aren't like in demand, like things like Rest in Peace and stuff, those will tank super quick, and so those cards they'll just hold on to. But things like Thoughtseize that are, you know, like everyone's hyped about it, but it might not pan out to be as good in standard as it, you know, could be. Policeman Lion, same deal. Like, I'll sell those off right away. And then I go back, like, 2-3 months later, because, like, I just use my account to draft strictly, so I don't care about standard. I go back later, and I realize, oh, you know, I had 12 Deathrite Shamans and, like, 4 Abrupt Decays last time I logged on, and I sold those when they were, like, 5-6 ticks apiece, as opposed to, like, 2 ticks when they first came out. So, I mean, that's how I treat Moto. As far as paper goes, I mean, it's, like Jason said, it's a slower game. You have to wait for things to go up. But at the same time, you can almost force it in the sense that, like with markets like TCG Player, like I can go through and buy everything out up to a certain price point on TCG Player. And then, you know, it's a dangerous game, but you can put a bunch of copies up at a few cents less than what you left that last one at and sell all of those ones that you just bought in hopes that they ship to you. But, and there are people that do that. Or, you know, if you have 100 copies and say you buy 200 more copies, you can put your original 100 copies up. But that's about the only way to like immediately move the market, and that's not always going to work.
So here's a question I have. We all know that there's a Pro Tour bump, right? We all know that whatever decks are in the top 8 or even the top 4, we know that those are going to instantly see a 20% bump. Do you approach that as, do you try to guess before the Pro Tour, or do you just not even bother?
I don't try and guess. I try and find out from resources and people.
Yeah, we get intel from the floor. That's the best way. Honestly, the equivalent, I guess, of your MTG Goldfish or your, I don't know, whatever that Japanese site you mentioned, I forgot.
Mosoba.
Okay. Your equivalent of that is honestly just Twitter. Twitter is a very low tech way to solve the problem of, you know, what is the market doing? We're not getting information. People tweet all kind of stuff, you know, and they're giving you intel whether or not they think they're giving you intel. Like, if it's like, oh, hey, I got a deck tech. Here's a tweet to the link. Or, hey, I can't believe I just watched Reed Duke using Esper crush what I thought was a better red-green deck. You see all kind of stuff like that. Or people are just like, hey, I see a lot of, you know, a lot of boon setters in the top 8. That kind of information is just freely thrown around on Twitter. Sometimes by the same people that write articles and charge money for people to read them.
Yes. So therefore, take it at a grain of salt.
Twitter is a fantastic resource. It really is.
It is. Now, what? Now, obviously, last week we saw the green deck, that mono green ramp deck at the SCG. Open, Crush, and Garrick on Moto just doubled in price. He's kind of coming back crashing a bit. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of Garrick Colliver Beast? Was that just a flash in the pan, or?
I don't like cards that are only good in one deck.
I think the card is good in multiple decks. I think the biggest problem with it is it's not a four of in multiple decks. There's a number of decks that are running it in the board.
What other deck would play Garrick?
There's mono green that runs it. There's the green white deck that ran it. Junk, I think, runs a copy in the board. Like, really? there's a number of decks that like will utilize it, but most of the time it's like a two
of.
It's
a one of.
It's like a one of in the main or a two of in the board. I've seen a lot of decks because, I mean, versus control, it's one of those things like you have to answer this card or else you're just gonna get like all of a sudden my card advantage engine is better than yours.
So then basically sell. if you got a bump up,
I mean, I think they are certainly about as high as they're going to go. But at the same time, I don't know that you have to fire sale them. Like, I think they're going to show up in enough of those sideboards that people will still have that, like, price point logic thinking, okay, it's still seeing play, so it's still going to be worth this much money. Like, I don't see it really, I don't see it tanking, I guess is the best way to say it. I see it slowly dropping down. But at the same time, it could just as easily show up in, like, you know, say the same six lists, top eight. And they're all running on two of Garrick in the sideboard, like it could potentially go up at that point. But I mean, I don't see much room for it to go up.
Yeah, so, now in paper, the mover wasn't Garrick, it was Boonsetter. That was a card I feel much better about as a spec because it got played across multiple decks. And I feel something like Reverent Hunter seems like it might be an okay spec because it's just so low. Like I really like buying rares at about bulk, but really that mono green deck never needs to show up again and Boonsetter's gonna get played because you know, it's quite good. I think people were trying to use it as a Wolfear Avenger before, and it wasn't really fitting that role, so I think some people abandoned it early in testing. But if you use it for kind of like a Thragtux worth of damage as a combat trick, it's actually, you know, quite good, and it makes people scared when you have that kind of mana held up. So it's just people are playing it a bit differently. I think it can get played in, like, Naya decks. I think it can get played in, like, a black-green midrange or a junk. There's lots of different decks, and by the time you get to five mana, even with three colors, you know, your mana's still pretty decent right now. You can probably have double green by the time you get to, you know, bestow mana. So,
oh yeah, by bestow mana for sure. Turn three, maybe.
Yeah. So I really like cards that have utility in multiple decks as specs a lot more than something that, like, everyone's like, wow, how could Nylia be only 7 when Purphoros is 25? Like, Nylia is really good in that mono green deck. I don't think that's a good spec either. Yeah, I mean, I like to see a card in multiple decks before I'll buy in.
I think the main problem is people go, Purphoros is, you know, 20 or 15 or whatever, and compare it to Nylia, which is actually seeing play, where Purphoros is not seeing a ton of it, and they go, well, that card can be 18, but the problem is, that's like a fallacy logic. It just has to drop down to the point where it should be to begin with. Like, Nylia should maybe be 8 because Purphoros should be 6, you know?
It's funny, on Moto, Purphoros is $6.
Yep.
It's tanked so hard.
And that just proves, that's what I love about Moto is the market adjusts so much quicker, and there's many times when the Moto market will actually adjust before the real world market, even though the real world market has an extra 3 weeks.
Because it's so much easier to sell on Moto. You can sell with a mouse click.
And people react.
If you're a player and you open a booster pack, you're stuck with that card. You're going to sell it for buy list?
And people react. And you also got people that want to test. So there's people on the Pro Tour that are buying these cars and they need to get foros, and there's a demand drive. So actually, if you see cards spiking on Moto for no other reason, there might actually be play. Because like Master of the Waves.
Oh, good. You finally talk about that. What is that card? Why has it gone up so much? It's garbage.
It's not garbage. Like it's
fucking bulk mythic garbage. It's going to see nothing.
It's more expensive than all the gods on Moto by at least a dollar. Thassa just finally broke over. Thassa's now at $4.50.
Here's the thing about Master of the Waves. That card was $2 when it came out.
I understand.
Day one. And it's just gone up slowly every day, so.
If there is a mid-range deck that runs blue, yes, I understand it's not Huntmaster. However, it may be the best possible replacement as far as like what that card did for putting, you know, two bodies in play on four. Like, sometimes that's all you needed to do.
Wow.
I'm not saying it's great, but, like,
The blue Huntmaster, can I quote you on that?
No, like I said, I'm not saying it's Huntmaster, but sometimes you take what you can get. Like,
and you have my permission to quote him.
I mean, that's fine. It's no different than like
when I'm tweeting that right now.
It's no different than like when people are telling me like the temples are not good. And I said, no, it's just that you're comparing the temples to the Corset lands where we were super spoiled having those. It's not that it has to be good comparatively to other things in other formats. It just has to be good enough for the current format. And that card might be, like, everyone hates it because they look at it and they just see this, like, bad Timmy Mythic without looking any further and don't realize, like, they may actually have application. Like, there's not, like, any spot removal that was going to kill it was going to kill it most other four drops anyway. So what's the difference? Like, yeah, you lose your tokens and everyone argues, oh, they don't stick around. But who cares? Like, anything else you were going to play, if they shoot a removal spell at it, that was going to die regardless.
If a blue deck is out there, the card that, I mean, I was on and Marcel kind of likes it too, is that Sphinx.
Hey, that's my pick of the week, man. You just stole my pick of the week.
Sorry. I didn't know, man. I thought you picked
that. Are you really going to tag on Jess pick of the week from last week and say it's yours?
Wait, no, I'm just fucking with him.
My pick of the week's totally different. Prognostic Sphinx, Ryan.
Yeah,
the 3/5 thing.
Yeah, I think that's a totally good pick to get.
Who was it that called it the best card in their deck? It was like Sam Black or somebody like that.
William Jensen, the future.
Oh yeah, Huey said it was the best card in his deck.
I mean, it seems really good. It just sets up your draws. I mean, I like the card. I just don't know how much potential it has to gain.
It was one of those cards you needed to play, I think, first. Like, when people played it in Limited, they're like, oh, this is actually oppressive.
Yeah, the problem is it good enough to be a 4-of index? And is it good enough to make it into more than one deck for financial purposes?
I'm hearing that it's better than Aetherlane.
That's what I'm hearing too.
You can run it out with less mana.
And here's the thing, it's only 11 cents on Modo. I mean, dude, yeah, you got $5.
Modo's a different game, I guess.
Do a pick of the week right now and call that Maddie's?
I got a better pick than that.
We're co-signing.
That's Corbin's pick of the week. That's fine. That's Corbin's. Jeff last week, Corbin.
Alright, fuck it. We're going to pick of the week then. My pick of the week is Mutavault. That card is a 4-of in almost every deck. It plays in every deck. It has gone up pretty high already. It's just going up and up. You probably missed the window on Moda. It was like $10 last week. Now it's like 12. It's going to see a huge play at the PT. It's a man land that in every testing video I watch survives Supreme Verdicts, Detention Spheres, all kinds of shit. I just love this card. I think it's going to be played. It's eternal. I love it. I think this in paper or Moda, it's a good pick, man. I don't know if I like it at 12 though on Moda right now. I'd watch it, but.
So would you sell right now? If you had some, or would you?
I do have some. The thing is, if you look at the metagame moving forward, I don't see Mutavault not being played, and, I mean, Theros is being drafted more than M14 right now, so supply's drying up. Maybe it will spike. Tough to say, man. It's hard. Buying in at over 10 tickets on Moto is very dangerous.
Rare.
Now, aware, Doug Lynn from QS is doing a 10-minute finance podcast. He's calling Merchant Scroll, and Mutavault is a card that he's backing Maddie up on this. He said people stop opening M14 because Theros is out to draft, like, Mutavault's only going to go up. So I think the price it's at now is probably going to be the lowest it's going to be. I don't know about Modo, but definitely for paper, I'm very, very bullish on Mutavault right now.
What is it in paper now? $15 is roughly. Yeah, it's saying right now 1501, but for paper.
I think
at $15, do you like it? Or do you want it cheap?
Like, I'm not buying a million, but like, if you want them to play with, they're not going to be below 15, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you could buy now, play them 3 months, and sell out what you bought in at. Like, there's no fear of it dropping.
Yeah, I mean, maybe ever.
Yeah, like,
who's redeeming sets of, is that a thing? Is like, core set redemption on Modo a thing?
Yeah,
is that going to dump significant numbers of copies?
Yeah, well, it is. Here's something interesting. You probably have heard this too. Moda raised their prices on redemption from $5 to, what was it?
25.
Yeah. So that kind of like edged out a lot of the casuals who were doing it. Like, that's what I was doing. And I don't do it anymore because it's just not worth it with shipping and everything. But stores rely on that. So, I don't know. I mean, there is definitely a point at which you see when redemption is active, the prices in paper drop, and the prices in Moto go up, right, as supply goes down, and it's this flip. So I don't know. I think in Moto this still is a good buy.
Well, I noticed too, on Moto, when you, like, during that time, it seems like the cards to actually target are the bulk mythics, because people have to have them to complete those sets, and especially, like, the bulk foil mythics. Like, yes. I mean, those are always worth a ton more on Moto than they are in real life. I mean, like, any bulk mythic can reach $8 or $9 easily.
Yeah.
Foil. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. There was that whole thing when Zendikar was when it was just exiting the redemption phase, the cards were absurd. They were like $90 for a foil Iona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like absurdly priced.
Now, Maddie, tell me what you think of this technique. I've heard people say that a technique they like is to kind of hoard, like shitty mythic rares as a redemption approaches, because people aren't mindful that they're going to need those, and all of a sudden they're like, oh man, I need this shitty mythic, and the price goes up on those. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
It is. It is a 100% tactic that many unscrupulous people use. I don't do it because that's not really, I'm just trying to afford Moto. That's what I'm doing. But there's a lot of people that do it. It's hilarious that when I was actually trying to redeem Innistrad, that was the last set I redeemed, and I couldn't find that, what is it, Grimir of the Dead? That horrible card that was like nothing. It was like 50 cents. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go to redeem it when it's closed and it's like, oh, it's like $8. For 8 tickets. And you're like, are you shitting me? Like, I don't want to pay 8 tickets for this.
But it's the last
card you need. Yeah, exactly. So it happens. If you're going to do that strategy, then now is when you do it.
Sure.
Because those cards, like, what is it? That 6 mana costing, Gorgon, Mythic Gorgon is like below 50 cents.
Hythonia. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the thing with Mythics, in Moto. Before the cheap redemption, they would never go really that much below a dollar. Now, they hit 30 cents. And when they do, they peak up and down from 30 cents to about $1.10, 30 cents to $1.50, and they go up and down during the life cycle. So never buy a bulk Mythic at over a dollar. Yeah. Just wait. And when you see them at 30 cents, just snap the shit out of them if you want to go that bulk route. Cause you can then make some bank. But here's the thing. You can't sell four at a time. It's a slow, slow offload. So several people have like gotten burned by that strategy cause they can't unload them fast enough. So,
see, what I do is when I play, you know, I get the pretty much like play sets of all my cards. And by the rotation, you're going to have cards like that are like $1, that are $2, that there's no reason to even sell them post-rotation, you know, before rotation. And you just sit down on them and you wait until the redemption comes, and those cards will be right back up to value. And, you know, you just leave them alone until you get to that point, because really there's no point in selling them off at like a ticket when you can get like 5 tickets a couple years down the line.
Very true. I have a bonus pick of the week, because what I did is I sold all my Innistrad block cards, like an idiot, and I didn't keep certain ones, and now they've dropped to almost nothing, and now I'm gonna buy back some playsets for my, you know, Eternal playables. So I've been watching several cards, everyone knows Lilygeist, Grizzlebrand, but Restoration Angel is my pick. If you sold off and you want back in, now is the time to get them. They were dipping, almost touching 3 tickets, which is absurd, based on that card's price history. It is $371 right now. I think that is the bottom. It might flirt with, you know, $330 again, but I see that card as a modern staple. Jason, what do you think?
It's a Restoration Angel, so it's got a lot of things going for it. It's got the fact that it's, you know, really good with Kiki Jiki to keep people off, like, you know, some of the counter spells to keep that combo from going off. You know, the what is it? Spellskite doesn't work. You have the fact that it's an angel, and you have the fact that, like, on Moto, they didn't give those promos out to everybody, you know, like they did in paper. So I think that's a lot of factors that all converge to make that a pretty solid spec on Moto, I think.
Side note, the promo on Moto is 15 tickets. I don't know why, because you could simply just art swap your cards. But for some reason, some bizarre promos have absurdly high prices.
Well, Cavern of Souls is probably in the same situation. It did hit like 4 tickets and now it's climbing back up. I think, you know, right now is the time to get in on that card for sure.
Did I miss it? What is that up to now? 475?
Yeah.
Shit, I missed it.
Marcel, you wrecked me.
Oh, that's your pick of the week?
Yep.
Oh,
I was just gonna say,
like, yours can be Master of the Waves, Ryan.
I mean, sure. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, Cavern got down to like $7 in real life. And as I think it's back up to 9 now? Might have 13. Gone up a little. Has it already climbed that much? Jeez. But yeah, there was dealers who were happy to sell out of them to other dealers. I watched them change hands in Detroit at $8 a piece. Dealer to dealer. Like TCG player, you can get them for $9 to $10 right now. And I mean, that card's never gonna stay that low. Like, you wanna talk about a card like Mutavault, this card will always see eternal play.
Yeah, and you know what?
It will be $40 in 2 years, 3 years.
It absolutely reminds me of like a Mutavault. Because in Modern, and any other eternal playables, if you're running a creature deck, how do you not run this? Like, right. It's a 4-of. It's a 4-of, right? It's your counterspell, protection. So, yeah. Totally love that card.
Yeah. I don't know. It amazes me that card is still, like, that it just got hit so hard from rotation. And then there's cards like Avacyn that, then there's cards like Avacyn that actually went up $3.
Oh, the damn casuals. It's all their thing.
I mean, I knew it wouldn't go down, but I didn't think it would spike 2 days after rotation.
I actually wrote in an article that I predicted it probably would go down a little bit, but it would shoot right back up. And I think people are a little savvier about what happens at rotation now. So that just never happened.
It's just
strange.
I was
looking at a card like
I can understand it stagnating, but why did it go up?
You know, I couldn't tell you.
Cause people are buying it, man.
Cause maybe they're listed at that, but not selling at that.
Could be.
Mind if I go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
here's a
he
card.
Can't.
Stop, oh, Jason. No.
Shut up, Jason.
Shut up, man.
So my pick of the week is...
Oh, really? This is happening. Go ahead, Marcel.
Yeah, so my pick of the week is... Okay, hold on, I gotta find something first. Go ahead, Jason.
He fucking heavy metaled you right there. You're making me feel at home, boys. I love it.
Okay, so here's a card that I don't understand why it's the price it is. So... A few days ago, you could buy Advent of the Worm for $3. You know what else is $3? Master of Cruelties is $3. Like,
aw, come on.
Why is Advent of the Worm? It's up to about $4 now. eBay is up to an astonishing $6. So I think eBay is usually a pretty good indicator of things to come. So you can still get pretty cheap copies on TCG Player. I definitely bought a lot of them. There's still a lot left. Advent of the Worm was in the top three decks. And it was three different decks. There was like the green white deck, there was the junk deck, and then there was like a Naya type deck, and they
and
all ran
it. And the green white populate deck.
Yeah, that was in the top eight as well. So like, okay. Yeah, like green white is it's doable. Green white black, green white red, green white just itself. Like if there's a Bant deck that could run it, like
yep.
Advent of the Worm is. The double cost being green is good for it. The fact that you can populate those tokens is really good. It's, you know, it's an instant speed creature that gets around their wraths and stuff like that. You can play it after they wrath you. It's just, it's a great card and it shouldn't be $4. Like by Friday, it's probably like 15. Everyone's like, thanks for the tip, but if it hasn't,
yeah.
It's going to, like, I think you scoop a couple hundo.
Yeah,
it's sure.
In Moto, it's 331. It's flirted. Briefly with a higher ceiling. For some reason, I agree with you. I don't know why this card is so cheap.
Somebody's like, oh, it was a one of an event deck. Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. I mean, it's from the last set. It didn't get drafted as heavily as Return to Ravnica.
Nope.
It seems to be a card that even might have fringe modern playability. It's a good, powerful card in standard. I agree. I don't know why this is so low. Although, there's this like stigma of rares, and Snapcaster Mage on Moto said it. It was the most played rare, I think, in a long time. Well, I guess Thragtusk broke that mold, but Snapcaster Mage never went above 7 tickets on Moto. It just flirted between 5 and 7 its entire life. I don't know why. It's such a good card. Blows my mind.
But so if you bought in it, if it hits 5 or if it hits 7 and that's the ceiling, how much can you make buying in a Moto right now?
Snapcaster Mage is 451.
No, Advent.
Oh, 331.
Okay, so you can still double up. Worst case scenario. Well, I guess best case scenario, right? I don't know. I guess I don't like this as much on Moto then, apparently, but I think this is nuts in paper. Like, this is not a $4 card.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not sure Moto, tough call. I think if it does see play at the Pro Tour, this card is $6 on Monday morning on Moto. So if you want to, this is one of those gambling cards. You want to gamble? Go ahead. But it's not going to drop below $3 on Monday, so you could still potentially not lose. So I guess it's safe from that respect.
Well, for Moto, I will say my pick of the week is going to be Temple of Mystery. And I do think...
Is it specific to that color, Marcel, or is it all the temples?
It's specific to this color because it's right now like $1.19. Everything else, the closest other one is the Temple Abandoned, which is the green-red. This is the green-blue one. And you can pick them up for $1, even cheaper than that. If you set up a classifieds and start buying them, you can get them. You could pretty much get most of the temples
for
like $1 for like $1. And I think at $1, you are doing everything right by buying them. Jeez. Because like I mean, these are going to be played. These are going to be played in standard. These are the lands, especially post rotation. Like these are going to be more than $1. They may hit $3 on Moto, and ones that are really in play may hit $7 or $8. So I mean, Temple Mystery just being $1 and it's a blue card, like blue is control and bent is a thing. And maybe not.
I gotta jump in and say no way. These cards remind me of the Innistrad lands, and on Moto those cards tank down very quickly between $1 and $2, $1 and $2 tickets, and they just stayed there. They didn't really do anything. And I see these cards. I understand the Moto base, like the meta base is like rougher, but still, I agree. At a ticket, yeah, why not? Cause go for it. But I see these cards just tanking, man.
Innistrad lands were not insane on Moto like they were in paper.
Yeah, no, they were
insane. Like $14 for a land. Still.
Yeah, I was hoping they would. I mean, you got like $1 or $2 out of them. Like I bought them all for like under $1, and then some of them hit $2 or $3, which is like you're not like doing triple, but you're doubling up your money. Like it's a guaranteed bet.
Here's the thing. So in that same breath, shock lands. You know the shock lands are the premier land. So they have to, in my opinion, Shocklands will double. So if a Shockland is 8 tickets, then the Temple's gonna be 4 tickets. Right? They're never gonna come close to the same value.
Then buy them for $1. Like $1 you can't go wrong. Like I mean that's just-
Yeah,
that's
at $1 you can't, yeah.
Especially for a blue Temple, like I mean that's- Once Bant becomes a thing, it's not gonna be a dollar card no more, and it's not possible. So
what do you think about the Temple of Silence at 340, the black and white one? I hate that.
I've been selling them all day. I've been pulling them in draft. I've been drafting all day, and I got like 3 of them, and I'm just selling them because I know all those prices are going to come down. All of them, everything else is going to come down. I think they're going to settle below 2 tickets in a ticket, all of them. And at that point, I'll buy my play sets and maybe some to sit on, because I think, you know, that's probably about as cheap as they're going to get. And there's going to be some upside because I mean, as people realize, your mana base is going to be more and more important, and these lands are not as bad as people make them out to be. They're actually pretty
good. Now, are we getting the other set of temples in Born of the Gods, right?
Yeah. I don't know how they're splitting them up, if they're going to do 2 and 3, or if they're just going to do 5.
They're going to do 5.
Oh, you know that for sure?
That's what they said. They're going to do this one.
Did they?
Yeah.
They announced
they did this because they just wanted to have the colors come out in a certain way, so they're going to do the gate crash colors first, and then they're going to do the return to Ravnica colors the next one.
You know, we're getting a legendary lands in the last set then.
And then we're also going to get dual colored, mini gods. We're going to get 5 and 5.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. We're getting the villain gods.
Yeah.
Cool.
And speaking of also the gods, like I've been picking up Erebos and, Healing God for 3 tickets. Like buying on the classifieds. I got Thassa and Periphos for 5 tickets.
What's Thassa at?
$7.49 now.
Do we see upside on that? Because I know when we had Jeff on the cast last week, Jeff Hoogland, he was very bullish on that card.
Well, I got in at 5. I got that. So I think that's at $5 you can get it. I think some of these guys are going to be at least, you know, in the 10 to 12 range and 15 range. And if some of them really breaks out, they'll be $20-$30 cards. So buying them at below 10.
On Moto 2030, no.
They're mythics. Are you?
They are mythics, but the planeswalkers are like Elspeth and Xenagos and Nick, whatever the frickin' Ashiok there. They're gonna be the premier ones. I don't see the gods cracking over 20, maybe 25 max. Like It's tough. You look at Thassa and you're like, 3 mana, okay, for a blue deck. Sure, maybe I got counter magic. I could drop her and afford to lose a bit of, I don't know, play, but you're playing a blue aggro deck to build advantage of her?
No, it's the scry. You don't even need
the free scry, yeah.
You don't even need the creature. The creature is
You'd play a 3-mana enchantment that just scry one every turn?
Yes, I would.
No, you wouldn't.
I didn't think that initially either. It seems like that it's a small amount of incremental advantage, but it buries people.
Yeah.
It's kind of what Jeff indicated.
You haven't played with it. Like, I had it at pre-release, and when I felt dirty. Like, I'll scry again. And they look at you like, you're scrying again. Oh yeah, I'm scrying again this turn.
And then I'll drop a land and scry again, and then I'll cast a spell and I'll scry again, yeah.
And every time you ship a land to the bottom of your deck, think about it as you're actually drawing a card.
Drawing a card.
Yeah, that feels good.
I think you're right. Do you think any of the gods besides the green one, have a potential to be cast in an ocean style deck?
I think they all have, I think they're all gonna see play. I just think that people haven't figured out how to use them yet, and they're undervalued, so I would get them now while you can, while they're so cheap, because they're just gonna go up. I mean, I agree.
I like them at 3 tickets each. I don't like Thassa at 7 right now. I think she could dip. If she doesn't see any play at the Pro Tour, that card will be 5 tickets on Monday.
Yeah.
But I agree. Pick your bottom, and yeah, I'd have a playset of each of them just in case, cause they remind me of Titans, where it's like flavor of the week. And
yep. Remember Frost Titan was the first one to hit 20?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when they first came out, it was the hilarious roundabout of like, who's the good god this week? You know, and then one week it's frickin' Thunderbolt God or Lightning Bolt God or Titan.
It seems like it's switching up. So like initially, Porphyros was spoiled and everyone's like, oh god, that's so good, it's punishing. And all the aggro decks are like, this is a real obvious inclusion. But like when you look at what turn you want to play that,
yeah.
It seems like the control ones are better, because you can drop a Thassa and be like, ah, fuck it. I don't need to play a threat this turn. But in an aggro deck, like, you can't really take a turn off from playing a threat. So right. Purphoros is really expensive in paper, because, like, it appealed to all the casuals. You don't really get casual Moto players.
I think, honestly, the green one was the biggest sleeper. And I think it's really odd to compare to this, but the original Lorwyn Walkers, remembers when they came out, Chandra was by and far the most expensive on presale, I believe.
Yeah, like, I think you're right about
quite
that.
Quite a bit. Like, everyone thought she was going to be the nuts. Yeah, Chandra was like the premier one. Because people saw damage every turn to ping. Like, you looked at it and you were like, man, I really do like, you know, just Timmying every turn. And it seemed good. And in all honesty, it was pretty good. But then, like, Garrett wasn't really that great until people started playing these, like, mid-rangey rock-style decks. And then all of a sudden you fit into an aggro deck, too, for the overrun. And, like, he's the one that really took over. I mean, that guy was, what, $15, $20 at one point, if I remember?
Liliana was way up there initially, too. I remember, like, a lot of people were playing something like Una's Prowler and Liliana and stuff like that in a deck. And just because they're like, oh, this, you know, people were evaluating Liliana based on her ultimate because nobody knew not to do that.
Right. And, I mean, the way I'm looking at it is green is the only one of the gods that I think is going to be running to run a 4 of. Two. Oh. And so
it's the only one people are going to turn on, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Like people can quickly turn that one on. And when you look at like Thassa, like sure she's good, but like Mono Blue doesn't want to have 4 of her in the deck.
No.
Or like Blue X doesn't want 4 in the deck. Like you maybe want 2. Some will only play like a Miser's copy.
Well, you can scry them away if there's.
Well, you know, and there's always that theory, but like how miserable does it feel to open your hand with 2 Thassas in it?
Yeah.
Like it's not about like what you can do with it while it's in your deck or if Thassa's in play. It's about like. What, when Thassa is not in play, but you already have one in your hand and you're waiting to
plus drop
it.
Plus you have 3
like,
turns to draw it.
Right.
Yeah, so
good
that's,
point.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't think the red one's a 4 of either. Like what mid-range or aggro deck really wants to be running 4 of something?
I think the red one's a 0 of. Everything people were saying was cute. Nobody was saying anything powerful.
I mean, yeah, I didn't think the red was good when I first saw it, and I mean, I stuck by that, but.
Here's the thing with Furfros. It's not an aggro deck, it's a control combo card that you generate some kind of recurrable drop a creature ping you. That ability is absurdly powerful.
Assemble the Legion!
I want to do that though, I'll just play black and run Whip with Obsidat.
Okay, well we gotta talk about Whip.
I'm How in powerful? Better colors and it's a better finisher.
Let's talk about Whip and the equipments then. They all garbage? Whip seems to be by far
my favorite.
That could be, yeah, it could be splashed in anything. Just watching what it did on the SCG coverage, I thought that card was absurd.
Whip just loved that and Whip with the Aetherling.
Aetherling. But not even just that. Not, you know what's hilarious? Not even that interaction is what blew me away. That you could drop this card on turn four and just smash with your team, gain 6-7 life. I mean, wow, like, it just seemed to, like, reverse board states. You know, you could be losing, you drop the whip, and now we're racing. But I'm winning, because you can't beat me. I love that card. I think that, that's a good card, man.
I don't know what the plan. I evaluated that card. Like, it's... I just didn't play enough, you know. I didn't sleeve up enough stuff when it was spoiled. But like when you play with whip, it's pretty good. But you know, there's Deathrite Shaman and there's Skooze right now. So the fact that green is, you know, all over the place already, I think that's going to mitigate how effective the whip is. And blue white also deals with it with D-Sphere. So I was actually at FNM playing with a whip deck and. I punted a match where I didn't remove my opponent's Obsidet, with a trigger on the stack, and, it got D-sphered every time I played against blue-white, and it just, you know, it's great, but it's just, it's another thing people can deal with. It's,
here's
if the meta's ready for it, I don't think it's gonna be insane.
Well, check this out. I remember playing with Basilisk Caller, and that was that Worldwake equipment, really cheap Death Touch lifelink.
Yeah.
And it would just do things. Same thing with Wyrmcoral Engine. Here's what I think that whip really does. If I'm playing a green deck and they're going to start exiling my graveyard and my entire fucking team has lifelink, go ahead. I'm going to win. I don't care. What, name a card that has granted my entire team lifelink ever. Nothing.
No, there's that thing that gives your team lifelink and double strike.
Yeah, for one turn.
True Conviction. It was an enchantment.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it was six mana and it was white.
Oh, it was a beautiful card though.
That was a good card though. But, I just think this card at four mana and for what it does, it's 281 on Modo.
Oh, wow.
I'm just gonna buy a couple. I think this card is nutty and it doesn't necessarily have to go the control route or, the reanimator route. It's just an added bonus if you can get it off. And it makes your opponent, number one, their combat mat goes out to shit, their racing goes out to shit, and now they gotta worry about your graveyard. So, I love it. I think that card is sweet and very powerful.
It's three-ish in paper. Now, some of this equipment is in those precons. Is Whip in a precon? Cause I know Bow is, and I wanna say Hammer, maybe?
I thought they all would.
Oh, you might be right. I know the Trident or the Bident.
The Biden.
Yeah, if the Biden, yeah, the Biden's garbage. If the Biden and the Hammer and, the Bow is, they probably all are. Even still. I don't know.
We're saying the Biden is garbage now, but similar to the Titans, similar to, like, Planeswalkers, similar to the Gods, I think they're all gonna find a home. Like, they all have very powerful worldwide effects. And there will be some sort of deck that, like, I mean, just mono blue little guys could be a thing, you know, back it up with a couple counter spells, have Biden per card draw.
Biden, I'm not saying it's gonna be great. Assemble the legions.
But it could see play. Like,
assemble the Biden.
I mean, yeah, it's not necessarily saying that, like, that's definitely going to be a thing, but I think enough people will play around with that. Like, that card will be better than Bulk at some point. Even with, like, the mass printing. The problem with that one is being the promo, too, really sucks.
So here's the thing everyone's asked me about Stormbreath Dragon. It's 17 tickets on Moto.
It's like $30 in paper.
Yeah, it's 32. Hold on, wait. Here's what everyone's saying. No one wants to get burned. No one wants to get
hold
burned.
Hold on, wait. How are you gonna tell us to shut up on our cast? Alright, man.
So it's what I do, man. Sorry, dude. Everyone's saying this is like Thundermon. No one gets to get burned again by like, how much Thundermon went up. But, I don't know, man.
Thundermon went down because nobody was playing it. Like, people are playing Stormbreath. I think it's real overhyped, but like, you just pop up in Facebook. And it's half people saying, hey, I need four Stormbreath by Friday. And the other half is people like, yeah, good luck. Like my buddy Kyle said to my friend Joe today, he's like, you might as well say, hey, I need the same card as everyone else. Help. You know?
I think Stormbreath and Domri, if red-green has any sort of showing, which it should because I think enough people will just be jamming it there, both those cards are poised for a jump, probably online and in real life. I mean, I still don't get why Domri is like 22, 23 on like the eBay auction sites and stuff. It just doesn't make sense to me. Every deck that's running, it's a 4-up. And Chandra's 40. I understand the whole M14 versus not a core set, but at the same time, like, this card is still, people aren't busting these packs. Like, I don't see anybody Ravnica drafting anymore. So, the card should be going up.
Like, I think Chandra is probably a little bit closer to 25 than 40. Like, I know Star City's got him at 45, but, like, you can still find copies on Amazon for, like, $25.
I mean,
it's really weird there's such a disparity. I just don't, like, I don't even think there's upside to buying at 25 right now.
I mean, I disagree. They trade out really, really well at 45. Gonna find out.
Do you think she's gonna make an appearance at the PT?
Absolutely. I mean, Red Green's a thing. Two of her, four Domri. Like, that's what, like, most of the lists I'm seeing are running.
People online are still talking about Xenagos. Like, when's a good time to buy in? Is there ever a good time to buy in? I think he's garbage.
He's not garbage. He's a little better than I thought he was.
Yeah, he makes dudes, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, hasty dudes are relevant.
So his first Domri Raid to rotate out?
No. Like, the decks that are going to be playing him are either going to be, like, four Domri, and then you have a choice at that point. And your choice is, like, am I a mid-range deck? So I'm a mid-range deck, I want Chandra to be, like, gain me the advantage, deal with that kind of stuff. And, like, if you're low, you're the Balls of All aggro deck, but you want a little bit of, like, late-game reach, and then it goes to your options. So, like, I think those two are the interchangeable cards.
It just seems like his plus ability is just to do nothing in most of the time.
It is. It is. Most of the time, it is. Like, most of the time, he just sits there and does the same thing Mind Sculptor did. 0-0-0-0.
So do you think, like, Xenagos is similar to Vraska?
No.
In terms of, like... Yeah, well, they're very close in price. 9 tickets right now for Xenagos, I think.
Vraska is a much better card that never got played.
Really? No, this is better. Like, if you ever play a Garrett Relentless, like, this is present against a control deck. And the haste tokens on top of that. Like, that just adds way more pressure than they could deal with.
Yeah.
Well, and you could eat through a wrath, and you just start building back up again.
And there's times when, like, you just get the Monstrous and early Ember Swallower, and that can just completely kill the control matchups.
Yeah, I think if there's a Monstrous...
doing super well because you have an Ember Swallower and enough creatures to get the mana. It seems like
I mean,
in Magic
it
Christmas,
actually,
you're already winning.
It's really, like, yeah, I thought that too, but, like, if you really look at the realistic situation, so, like, say you go, like, turn 1 Mystic or turn 2 Karius or whatever, turn 3 Ember Swallower, turn 4, like, this guy, or even, like, turn 3, this guy, turn 4, Ember Swallower, turn 5, you can then Monstrous it with still only 2 creatures in play. Like, sometimes it's just like, oh, I made 2 mana with him this turn, it gets the +1 coincidentally, which is fine, but the 2 mana is what I needed to, like, turn this guy on. Like, it really, you're not going for getting, like, 5, 6, 7 mana off him at a time. When you use him, it's usually like, oh, I was 2 mana short of what I needed to do, or I was 3 mana short of what I needed to do. Like, that's not an unlikely situation, and it happened quite often.
He does seem like the Monstrous enabler. Like, that's what he was designed for.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, he was turning on a Stormbreath Dragon, or turning on an Ember Swallower most of the time in testing for us. So, like, that's when you were using his mana ability. Otherwise, he was just making dudes. And if the dudes survive, sweet, then it's easier to Monstrous those guys. Like, there was turns late game where it would be kind of a stalemate, you know, especially in the weird mirror matches. And then, like, you just have the ability all of a sudden to go, oh, Stormbreath you know, deal you 3 because that's the card you have in your hand or whatever, and then swing in over the top of your Stormbreath.
So what I'm hearing is sometimes he's better than an Acroan horse. Got it.
I mean, like I said, I don't think the card is great. I think it is interchangeable with Chandra. I don't like the decks that are trying to run all 3. I think that's just way too bad on Domri. But I think that the card is more playable than I originally thought. I think it's like $20 playable, $15 playable.
Yeah, I mean, at 9, he was 7 tickets yesterday, which I should have bought in, and I fucked up. He's 9.35 now on Moto. I kind of like him under 10. I think it's interesting. I wouldn't mind trying him out. I mean, he makes dudes. Like, we saw with Elspeth how powerful just making dudes is.
Isn't Elspeth down on Moto too?
Yeah, she's down to 26 tickets, I believe. She's come down quite a bit. I think she's gonna drop even further, but that's just my call. I don't think we're gonna see too much of an amazing performance from her at the Pro Tour. I could be wrong, but I think she's gonna be under 20 very soon.
Fair enough.
All right, so let's wrap this episode up. I need to get out of here and head out to work. So thank you, Maddie, for coming on. You want to tell people where they can reach you at?
Yeah, man, you can check me out every Friday on Mana Deprived/Heavy Meta. Or Twitter, you can follow any of the good old crew at Heavy Meta, Heavy Metal, MTGO Ferret, or Matty Studios on Twitter. We're usually there, shooting shit. We drop some craziness every now and then, and some useful information. But yeah, check us out, man.
Fair enough.
You could have Ryan and Corbin on your podcast.
I will.
Oh man, that was like a threat. I just want to give a quick shout out this week. I got to hang out with somebody who made my weekend a little less miserable, a guy named Lance Bloomfield, down in SCG, Columbus, or Cincinnati, no, Cleveland, that's the one of those Ohio places. He's a pretty cool guy, like, very interested in talking about, like, magic finance and stuff. I was thoroughly interested in hearing about, like, you know, magic finance from the person who is, like, utilizing the information that I'm giving out and, like, what they take away from it based on, like, where they are in the game. Like, if they're just trying to, like, you know, hold a collection or if they're trying to make money off of it. And, hopefully we'll be hearing a little more from him soon. But, just, like, give a shout-out.
Shout-out, Lance.
Shout-out to all our fans and listeners. Check us out next week. Later.
Yep, and if you're interested in being a writer or an editor for brainstormbrewery.com, we are still taking applications. So just go ahead and submit that to either the Brainstorm Brew email that's going to be in the show notes or altjason17@gmail.com. I'm going to be handling most of the that sort of thing. So go ahead and hit us up. We still need a few more writers and maybe another member of our editorial staff.
But don't tell Jason that you're a fan of him because he won't hire you. He hates
people. He so will. He so will.
He hates people who think he's cool.
I really do.
No wonder you love Kevin Metal so much.
That's right. Kevin Metal did it correctly and gave me a drunken lecture about why he loves to hate me. And I begrudgingly respected him after that.
That's awesome.
Hey, where's this brew, man? When do I get to taste this Motika brew that you guys got going on?
He tweeted a picture of all the like paraphernalia on a table, so it's happening.
Oh man, I'm excited. What one again?
The Black IPA.
The Black IPA. Oh man, no one's gonna like that. It's so bitter.
And you know what? We will prove that democracy does not work, and we'll just do what we want to do next time.
Oh man, good episode, boys.
Yeah, thank you, Batty. And see you guys later.
Yep.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.